Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brooke Gladstone in for Brian Lehrer, and now for a midpoint Olympic check-in with NPR sports reporter Mike Pesca, who is reporting now from London. How's it going over there, Mikey?
That's not a really good question, Brooke.
No, I'm just kidding.
You've been listening, huh?
I just thought that's the sort of thing you're into. Yeah.
Tell me some of the highlights from the past few days, wise guy.
It's great. It's by the way, it's midpoint. I haven't checked the schedule. Isn't it past that? Don't tell me I have 12
it's
more days.
It's midpoint in the same way that I'm middle-aged.
Okay, yeah. it's fair to middling. It's great. It's a cornucopia of sport, which is fantastic. And sometimes the more obscure, the better. And sometimes the more hyped, like that men's 100 meter, totally living up to the hype. God, being in that, you know, I've done, as a reporter, 4 Super Bowls, 5 World Series, Final Fours, all these things. That was the best. That, being in that stadium when Usain Bolt took the 100, was the most electric. Probably because it lasts 10 seconds, so you could pack it all. Into actually, if it lasted 10 seconds, he wouldn't have won. You know, eight of the nine competitors had sub 10, and and Asafa Powell pulled up lame. And that's just amazing to see all those people go that fast.
So that was something people could anticipate and yet was still stunningly exciting. What about the U.S. men's basketball beating Argentina? Something else people might expect.
Well, you know, that game was very close at halftime. So the U.S. had crushed Nigeria, and Nigeria is an interesting team. 9 of the 12 Nigerians were born in the U.S., so they're American Nigerian, and I was talking to most of them. And at first I said, you know, do you feel duly of each country? And many of these guys, a few of them who play in the NBA, were like, oh, no, I'm Nigerian. Don't get it wrong, because I think from, you know, appealing to the country of Nigeria, they have to affirm their bona fides. But when I said, no, you know, I kind of clarified and talked about this dual identity and how proud it made them. Then they really got into the question, and they liked being simultaneously both things. They didn't like it when they were playing the United States, and they beat them by, I don't have the box score in front of me, 493 points. But so the United States then lost a very close game to Lithuania, and then in the game against Argentina, which we saw yesterday, I guess you guys saw it last night there because they delayed it, it was a close game, and the United States said, you know, we're not going to have this be a close game. We're not going to have you Argentines be chippy and boisterous around us. And they put a hurt on that team that, if you're a fan of the United States, was just an amazing thing to see.
I'm sorry, you had me when you said it was a really close game against Lithuania.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, when Linus Kleiza wants to score, it's hard to deny him.
Listeners, if you have questions for Mike Pesca, call 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Mike knows everything. He's completely encyclopedic. So you've already told me what excited you the most this week. What were the big surprises or upsets of the game so far?
Well, you know, it's funny because it was I think the British media thought that their long jumper Redgrave wasn't supposed to win, but he did, and it was part of this triple gold medal day on the track with Jess Ennis and Mo Farah and Redgrave, and the British media were saying that it was an upset. It certainly wasn't, but if you need an upset to get going, I guess it was helpful. The two coolest things so far, one was a silver medal performance by Galen Rupp. That 10K race between him and Mo Farah, their training partners, they live in Oregon. Galen Rupp, conventionally American. Mo Farah, born in Somalia, moved to the UK, trains in America, runs for Great Britain. You know, some people say that was the greatest 10K race ever. It sets up the 5K, and I kind of like those long races. I guess I like all races because I kind of like the 10 meters also. But the long races, there's a little bit of buildup. You know, it takes a few laps just to get the strategy sorted out. There's a lot of strategy. And, man, in that final lap, when whoever decides to, you know, send it into high gear and gets the ball rolling, that's a fantastic – it's just a fantastic time in sports. I love that.
I was just
wondering. Oh, I'll also add one more thing. Great Britain, which has a terrible basketball team, the host nation gets to qualify in all these sports that they wouldn't otherwise have been allowed to play in. And so sometimes this just means, you know, teams that are frightfully overmatched lose by a lot. But the Great Britain Women's basketball team has done well, losing a lot of close games, perhaps not as exciting as actually winning a game, which Great Britain did against China. Now, Great Britain is ranked about 43rd in the world in the basketball rankings, but they have a very good NBA player, Luol Deng, who's born in Sudan, lived in London. He is English, and he plays for the Chicago Bulls, went to Duke. And Deng makes that team a legitimate team, and the crowd is so behind that they're so uninformed about what goes on in basketball, but they're so they cheer at all the wrong times, but they're so behind it. I think that really helped them.
Well, I was wondering if you happen to know whether a home team advantage occurs when particular host nations host the Olympics. The Brits are doing a lot better than they normally do in general.
Yes, it does, and it's been documented. And the reason you might think it's because of the emotion of the moment, and I do think that does come into play somewhat. I can't discount the fact that Andy Murray lost the Wimbledon finals less than a month ago against Roger Federer. He almost always loses to Roger Federer on the big stage. But in the Olympics, I can't discount the fact that he was so emotionally invested in winning and the crowd got so behind him, it helped him, spurred him on to win the gold. But the real reason why the host nations usually do well is in the run-up to the games. And you'll have more investment. You'll have fewer athletes dropping out just because they can't get the funding. You'll have more corporations giving funding. You'll have more people focused on the game. So it's the years leading up to the game that usually does pay off with gold or at least a medal in the weeks of the games themselves.
It sounds a little Hunger Games, what you're describing there, the mechanism. Do people drop magic potions from the sky, the sponsors?
Yes. Yes. The IOC recently outlawed a bag of holding or a sword worth 5 hit points. Might be Dungeons and Dragons. By the way, Hunger Games, the archer who taught the actress in the Hunger Games, Katuna Lorig, she actually won a medal for the United States.
Wow.
So there is a Hunger Games tie-in.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah. And the ones who lost a medal were killed.
Oh. I should not be laughing about death jokes at all. Not in this segment.
All right.
What about the disqualifications? I'm sure that happens every year. They seem to have made a lot of news on this side. You had the Chinese are doing very well in swimming, but one of the swimmers apparently used performance-enhancing drugs. You have the Chinese badminton players that didn't try hard enough, an Algerian runner. I mean, is there a trend here? What's going on?
Well, the word apparently with the Chinese swimmer, that's the key word. I mean, the only evidence for doping is they swim phenomenal times. And as one leading U.S. coach, but, as respected as can be in the anti-doping community, says, in our sport, whenever you see these huge jumps, whenever you see someone come out and put up these times, go back, look at the record. It's always been a case of doping. However, we as Americans have this innocent until proven guilty. And the courts here are the Court for Arbitration of Sports. They have encoded in their laws similar strictures. Yeah, just because someone has this amazing performance doesn't mean they're a doper. Just because they look so big, just because the Chinese swimming team has been in the past caught with vials of human growth hormone and so forth, that doesn't mean they're a doper. So it's kind of unfair. I mean, there's a chance. I don't know. Maybe it's a 90% chance or maybe it's a 10% mm-hmm. chance that the performer didn't dope. And so her Olympic medal it can't just be enjoyed honestly. Although I will say this, that people have raised that point. And they're like, oh, isn't people who rush to the defense of the of whoever's accused of doping say, isn't it unfair? She can't revel in it. Look, if she knows or if any athlete knows they didn't dope, then kind of what do they care if they get accused of it? Unless they're actually barred from competition, I would say that they would, just know that they themselves have made a great achievement. And as far as the badminton, it wasn't just the Chinese teams. See, because of the structure of the tournament, these teams looked ahead and said, you know what? If I actually wind up losing this match, I get a better draw in the late rounds. Mm-hmm. Because unlike in tennis tournaments, if you're familiar with Wimbledon or the U.S. Open or how they do it here, mm-hmm. it's a knockout from the beginning. You lose and that's it. You go home. The same is true for a lot of combat sports without a repêchage bracket. So
a repartage bracket. Okay,
yes.
You lost me, but maybe it doesn't matter.
Okay, put an asterisk there. So the structure of the tournament was such that they wanted to play a lot of matches before anyone was knocked out. And whenever you structure a tournament like that, you open yourself up to the possibility of match manipulation. The table tennis, we call it ping pong, don't call it ping pong. The table tennis guys had their tournament structured that way, and they decided these Olympics, they would go to the knockout structure because they realized that it was open to manipulation. Even in the world of badminton, national or international tournaments, something called the Thomas Cup, was seen to have been manipulated by the Chinese because they looked ahead and they said, oh, maybe if we lose, we do better.
Basically, if I can sum up here, what you're saying is that this is sort of built into the structure of this particular sport, and maybe it's not as bad as it seems?
It's built into the structure of any sport that structures its tournaments like that.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways around it. You could either have a totally different structure of a tournament, or how about this? Instead of beforehand putting up a schedule that says, you know, the winners of this group play the second place team in that group, you could do the draw after all the knockout rounds, and then mm-hmm. no one will know if they have an advantage or not. Or another way around that is to just have the rule they actually have, which is play hard all the time. And so for the most part, whenever there's been manipulation, it's been subtle, and mm-hmm. if one team wants to lose and the other team wants to win, it's pretty easy to lose but not look like you're tanking. What happened in these Olympics was that two teams who wanted to lose were facing each other, and that's when you get the farcical spectacle that we saw of serving that shuttlecock into the net oh so many times.
I have one last question. It comes from a caller who was asking about dual nationality. Who do they compete for, and what about these athletes who are competing as independents? Is there a way to sum this up quickly?
Yeah, dual nationality, it all depends on the nation's way of defining it. So those Nigerian basketball players certainly could play for the United States. Andre Iguodala on the United States team could play for Nigeria. Some countries make you be a citizen. Some countries say if you have one grandparent who was born here, like the Italian baseball team used to say, you could play for Italy. If you have a vowel ending in your last name, you're an Italian. And the independent nations are nations that kind of got caught in between establishing themselves. So there's only three or four. One is a runner from South Sudan. It's a new nation. They've got a lot to do. Getting an Olympic committee rolling isn't among their priorities. So that's why they're in the independent nations. It's not just that they like, you know, the music of M. Ward and Zooey Deschanel.
Mike, you're a genius. We will all work for you one day. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye, Brooke.
Mike Pesca, new NPR sports reporter who is in London reporting the Olympics.